It's time for Good Health, an opportunity to hear from our local healthcare community about the most current medical topics and how they relate to your healthy lifestyle. Good Health is brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Now let's welcome our host, Nick Bejarano.
Good morning. This is Nick Bejarano, your host for Good Health Radio Show, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. This is an interactive show, so you are encouraged to ask questions. If at any time you have a question, send it to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. With me today is Good Shepherd Healthcare System Chief Operations Officer, Jim Schlenker. Welcome, Jim.
Good morning.
So, Jim, to get us started, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, that could be dangerous. Well, I was originally from Washington State, so I'm a transplant. But I went to school at Central Washington University, have a finance background, became a CPA, and have been in healthcare for probably 29 years. I'd like to tell people I started when I was 10, but they don't believe that anymore. So I actually came into Oregon in 2008 and went to work in Pendleton for St. Anthony Hospital there in Pendleton, and was there for 6 years. As CFO mostly, but I also, a couple of years there, had an opportunity to be a part of the hospital rebuild, new hospital, new medical office building, and kind of ran the CEO, CFO for 2 years. Great opportunity. Not sure I would want to do that again for 2 years. I think my wife would agree. And then about 18 months ago, had an opportunity to come up and join Good Shepherd as Chief Operations Officer and work with Dennis Burke and his team. Which has been awesome, considering I've known Dennis for a few years, having been in Oregon, and then, of course, Dennis has been the CEO there for 27 years. So hope to learn a lot from him and continue to move forward and move my family here.
Great. So what attracted you to Good Shepherd?
You know, I think the biggest thing was that just the team that I saw and the direction they were going, especially as a community hospital. More and more you see hospitals that are combining with larger systems, and who knows if that'll happen with Good Shepherd, but at this point, you know, we're independent. We have lots of great relationships with those around us, whether they're local or in Tri-Cities or Portland or you know, even Pendleton, and yet the direction that they were going was something that I wanted to be a part of. And you know, along with that, it became, I've told the story many times, but it came pretty clear that we were supposed to be here. And the short version is, we sold our house in Pendleton the same day we listed it, and my wife said, how come we did that, and do you know that we don't really have a place to live? And the next day, we heard from a realtor about a house that we've been dealing with here in Hermiston, and it just happened really fast. And we're like, well, do you have any doubt now that we're supposed to be in Hermiston?
Absolutely not. So what attracted you to the community as well as to the hospital?
Well, to be honest, part of the attraction is we have family here. I mean, my wife's dad has been, who had retired from the railroad, had been here 30 years. So we've got some additional family here. We have family in Tri-Cities on her mom's side that really helped get us closer to the family that, even though Pendleton is not that much further away, we see a lot more of them. And with a 4 and a 5.5-year-old, everyone loves that, right, including us. And then, of course, the community itself is similar to one of the Yakima Valley communities I was in. So kind of I spent almost 20 years in the Yakima Valley, and very similar to that. And just kind of the growth that I've seen in Hermiston and the interaction and all the different projects, knew that this was a place that would be a great place to bring up my kids, have good school systems. My wife actually has a background and a master's in special education. So as you can imagine, she did some pretty hefty research on school systems and schools, and thought that this would be a great place as our kids enter school year age, with my daughter entering kindergarten this year, actually.
That is really amazing that you have so many ties to the community and you can come here and integrate so well. So going back to you, you talked a little bit about Good Shepherd, but what in your mind makes Good Shepherd unique?
Well, I think part of the thing that makes them unique is that as a small hospital in a smaller community, we do so much. And we'll probably talk about that a little bit later, but, you know, in terms of what that really means. But the reality is that Good Shepherd, you know, has outreach in many areas. including, for example, a retail pharmacy in Boardman. So, you know, that's not quite as far out as you can get, but still, it's a ways away, and we have a presence there. The uniqueness, I think, about Hermiston and Good Shepherd specifically is that, you know, it's kind of like many small towns. If you're here, it's because you want to be here. You know, people don't kind of drive along and just suddenly end up in any small town in America. And as difficult it is to recruit any type of employee in the healthcare industry, whether it's providers or nurses, et cetera, those people that we have here, I know they want to be here.
Right.
Because there are opportunities in other places, larger places, et cetera. And so I think that is the uniqueness, is knowing that if you're in the healthcare industry and you're in Hermiston, Oregon, at Good Shepherd, it's because you want to be here.
Exactly. So you touched on it a little bit about the uniqueness of the hospital. I understand that Good Shepherd is a critical access hospital. What does that mean?
That's a great question, and I'm glad you brought that up because it's really sometimes confusing to people. And we'll start with what that really means. So critical access hospital is really just a reimbursement designation by the federal government, and it specifically has to do with Medicare and Medicaid population. So we get paid a little differently based on our cost calculations for Medicare and Medicaid patients, but that's all it is. I mean, it has some limitations. It says that as a critical access hospital, you're only allowed to have up to 25 inpatients at any one time. You can only have a patient stay no longer than 4 days, so length of stay. And there's a few other things, but those are really the two key things. Mm-hmm. Our average daily census, for example, is somewhere between 13 and 15. We do hit 22, 23 sometimes, and occasionally have to make sure that we don't need to discharge patients to a different level of care, to a different facility, depending on the situation, in order to make sure that we stay under that 25-patient cap. Now, that being said, in all other respects, we are, quote-unquote, just another acute care hospital. So we're smaller than Sacred Heart or Deaconess in Spokane or Providence in Portland, of course. But we offer many, if not most, of the same services as any acute care hospital. And those services that we don't offer, cardiac care and some of the things that we just aren't big enough to recruit to or don't have enough volume to be able to support that service, we actually have partners like Cadillac who come in and bring their physicians, and we get space for them in our medical group or our clinic to see patients so that our patients, whether it's cardiac or oncology or some other service, can stay and have an opportunity to stay in the community and not have to drive out for those services. And so I think that's the biggest difference is, where we can, we provide the services. Where we can't, we get the services. And yet the bottom line is we're still an acute care hospital that provides kind of full services to the level that we're able to.
That is really awesome. Again, this is Nick Bejarano, and you're listening to the Good Health Radio Show, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System on KOHU. If you have any questions, please send us an email to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Again, that is kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. I understand that Good Shepherd has been expanding over the past few years. What are some of those projects? I know that when you started, you kind of started in on one of those projects as well.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I will say, when I first got here and was preparing for one of our board meetings, one of our administrative assistants said, "Don't forget your construction update." And I said, "Well, how often do those happen?" He goes, "Well, monthly, and I've been here several years, and I don't remember a month where we didn't have a construction update." And I kind of smiled, but then I thought, well, you know, to me, that goes to show that Good Shepherd continues to expand, continues to make sure that we address the needs of care. So when I came here, Good Shepherd was in a process of finalizing, I guess you'd say, or in the middle of the surgery expansion and remodel. And that included, you know, probably a $15 million project that included some new surgery rooms, larger rooms, which our physicians love, which it also included a remodel of kind of the older space, the locker rooms and some of the general areas, as well as some of the surgical rooms. And then it also included really a piece to help the hospital in general for the future, and that is a CUP, which is a central utility plant. So in adding these new rooms and new expansion, with the plans that we knew were coming along the horizon, it was determined that we really needed a better way to provide utilities to the hospital. And so there's actually a separate building with what I call the James Bond tunnel that goes underneath and connects the two hospitals for all the wiring and all the pipes. And so all of our utilities are supplied out of the plant, which will help us in other expansions like the one we'll talk about here in a second as we move forward. And so that was completed a few months ago, and the physicians love it. I think we also actually shelled in space for two more surgical rooms, which we haven't made a decision on when and if we will expand to those. But
sure.
I know that at the time that we do, the physicians who use those rooms will love them because they're just so much larger. They're like 700 square feet versus
wow.
maybe 450 or 500 square feet. So it gives them a lot more room for certain kinds of cases.
To actually have the ability to move around the patient better and have all of the tools that they need accessible. And
yeah, and one of those examples, of course, if you haven't talked about it in the past, we have a Da Vinci robot, which is a robot that does robot-assisted surgery with physicians for certain types of procedures that are less invasive. And it's a large piece of equipment. And so now we actually have a specific space that is next to the main surgery room that it would use mm-hmm. for it to be. And before, we kind of had to put it wherever we could and then get it out of the way when you're doing a surgery, and that became a challenge. So things like that, which seem small, really helped. We also, of course, expanded and added additional recovery rooms. So up to 15 recovery rooms we added, and that helps really the patient in terms of having the kind of a modern look and feel, of course, for comfort, but really a better suited for the nurse flow and the operational flow. The next project that we're actually getting ready to kick off, and you might have mentioned this before, but we're doing a groundbreaking next Tuesday, 10 a.m., and it actually is a expansion of our medical plaza next door. So for those who are familiar with the medical plaza, there's many services in there, surgeons in there. We have staff and cardiac rehab downstairs. And then the main floor is really used by our OBGYN women's group services, so Dr. Trupp and his staff. And so this building is going to mirror the wing that he's in. So there'll be another wing added onto the building. It will be three stories. We will shell in the top floor and the basement. And then the main floor, which is approximately 11,000 square feet, will be actually taken over by the women's group. They will move from where they are into that space.
So in talking about that, it sounds like it's going to make an immediate impact on the community because the Women's Health Center is going to be taking on the whole entire first floor, if I understand that correctly.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So do you know how much square footage that is additionally that's going to be added on there?
Yeah, it almost doubles them in size in terms of their current. And so the largest piece of that, of course, the space they're in now is, you know, not that old in terms of construction sites.
Okay.
And yet when they started kind of moving forward with their population and how fast things have been expanding in the area and around the area, around the community, it became evident that they just needed some different space. And so Dr. Trupp was obviously a key in providing information and background to our board of directors to help make and approve a decision to, well, let's add on the other wing, because in addition to getting the space that they need, obviously we can shell them some space for future expansion and services that maybe we don't have now that we can provide or that are just outgrowing their current space. And what a better time to do that than at the same time we're going to build another facility for the women's health group. So I think, you know, we have other physicians come in, which we'll talk about. One of them is a new OBGYN physician who is going to be joining the practice again because we were successful in recruiting someone and they need some additional help and just keeping up with the volume.
So, Jim, we did get a question from a community member who wants to know about, in addition to the North Main expansion, we're also going to be changing the parking lot and some of the other things, some of the flow of traffic there. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, and you'll start seeing that now, actually. They're starting to fence off certain areas. A part of this project is to really revamp our whole parking lot. And that includes a new parking area, of course, to accommodate the additional requirements for the new building. Mm-hmm. But it also includes our main parking lot as well as a couple side adjacent parking lots. It does not really affect the medical group parking lot area, but the main hospital parking lot. And so part of the reason that this was included in this project is that we've just had several concerns about how our parking lot layout is structured. And, you know, one of the primary ones, for lack of a better way to say it, is there's really a boulevard that goes right through the middle of the parking lot. And people who either come off of Elm and need to get to the medical group will come through that and occasionally probably go a little faster than they should, and vice versa. Somebody who's in the medical group and need to go out the other direction just kind of cut through that boulevard to go out through the parking lot. And, you know, my first 3 days here, I think I gladly paid enough attention that I did not step out in front of a fairly fast-moving car and was hoping that wasn't a sign and a welcome that or maybe not a welcome, but I'm still here. So I think part of that is just kind of restructuring it. So we'll be going to angled parking. We'll be actually putting a new boulevard in, which is kind of on the outside of the main parking lot. And really, if you think about where the grass levels are at the outreaches of the parking lot in the main parking lot, that's where the boulevard's kind of going to go. You know, the challenge will be, and we've been studying this obviously for a while, is how long will that parking lot be kind of messed up, so to speak, and what are we going to do about it, and how do we keep patients, you know, at the forefront?
Sure.
The largest piece is with the security camera coverage that we have across our campus, as well as just staff going out and counting spaces, over the last couple of weeks, they've used that information to determine, well, at our peak capacity, are we going to be okay if we shut down X, Y, and Z parking lot so they can work on all of them at the same time and get them going? And they'll be in phases, but you'll see some of that. And I think the short version was we will need some help from many people. The first people that I would ask help for is our staff. Mm-hmm. We've shared some drawings with our staff and say, you know, please park in these areas for employee parking and save, as we always try to do, save our upfront and closest parking to the hospital and to the medical clinic for our patients. And so it will be tight for a few weeks. We're looking at a couple other options that might help that flow.
Sure.
And hopefully we'll be able to talk about those in the near future. But I think that's the key thing. We had a construction meeting on Tuesday, and I think the bulk of that meeting, as you know, mm-hmm. as you were there, really talked about signage.
Right.
How do we make sure to have very clear signage and directions so that people can understand where they can go, where they should go, how to get where they're going, and not accidentally be on a construction site, which will be pretty difficult because there'll be a lot of fencing and help and direction that way. But and I think, I don't know, was there 10 or 15 different signs that the construction crew have started already to put up to make sure that it's very clear on how you get to where you're going, and therefore where you can park to get there.
As Jim mentioned, so the idea is to make it as easily accessible as possible to still maneuver around the campus, whether you're going to the medical office plaza or the hospital or any of the clinics, right?
Correct.
Okay. Again, you are listening to the Good Health Radio Show, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System on KOHU. If you have any questions, please send us an email to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Again, that is kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. And Jim, you touched on something a little bit when we were talking about the expansion here just a second ago, as far as shelling off space for some new services that we may need in the future. One of the questions that I have for you is, how do we determine what services our community actually needs, and how do we determine if they will actually be sustainable to be able to stay in our community?
Well, I think the biggest thing that, you know, and keep in mind whether I should apologize or not, but my background is finance, and so it's really about the numbers. I mean, part of it is about the numbers. If we have, you know, two patients who need a particular service, chances are we're never going to build something just for those two patients. Now, we'll do whatever we can to get those patient services.
Right.
At the same time, if we have, and I'll use an example here, our oncology program has kind of gone up and down with the relationships that we've had. It's a challenge to determine whether or not you bring a full-time oncologist on site. And so we have currently a relationship with Cadillac, who brings Dr. Chindapatla on site once a month and continues to expand that. And so as we see those patient levels rise to say we really want to be able to keep those patients in the community, then we continue to expand on that service. And some of those services end up in a capacity where we say, well, now we really need to just build some space or expand into some space that we have to accommodate those services. And there are several little services that that we continue to look at. Obviously, oncology is a big one that we continue to monitor and try to figure out how to better suit and better meet the needs of those patients. You know, we're looking at a pain management clinic, for example. I mean, that's,
sure.
that's a very kind of hot topic right now and probably should have been many years ago in terms of opioid use and overuse and abuse of the opioids and those narcotic medications. And so how do we address that need in a different manner than has been addressed before? And so we don't really have, you know, in our community a comprehensive pain management clinic. So that's something we know that we'll continue to see how we can expand on something like that. So really it's about what is the need, where can we help the population health, and what is the numbers of the people that we'd be serving.
Sure. And speaking of the need, I know for a fact that we are growing services and we are hiring new physicians that are coming to the community and some that are actually going to be onboarding here relatively soon. Could you tell us a little bit about what some of those specialties are?
Yes, I think it's really important to first iterate how difficult it is to recruit anybody.
Sure.
Not just to a small town. I mean, physicians and nurses alike and other providers, mid-level providers, nurse practitioners, are just becoming more and more scarce in terms of their availability because there's so much need in many other places.
Everywhere.
That being said, that's why we're kind of celebrating the fact that we have several physicians coming into the community this summer. We have a general surgeon who's going to be joining our practice at some point, Dr. Jones. His wife, who is actually an internal medicine physician and an endocrinologist, is actually joining us as well. So it was kind of great to get that 1-2 punch. We're glad they're coming. We also have a ED physician who's recently joined us, Dr. Buck, and he's actually a native of Hermiston. So
right.
It's great to have him come back to Hermiston with his family. Parents still live in town, and he's just came out of family residency, and he has joined our emergency room practice with lots of experience. So I think you've done some recent articles about him and some background, so hopefully people have got a chance to see that. So he's coming back. We also have mentioned earlier have an OBGYN physician who is joining us. Her name is Dr. Havkin, and I believe her and her fiancé are coming into town. So, again, kind of we're helping to expand the community. And then we also have a pediatrician who's signed with us and going to be joining us, Dr. Cannell, and he'll be joining our team, and we continue to look for ways to increase those services as well. And so Dr. Cannell, and who is bilingual, which will help immensely in that service, and really looking forward to him coming as well.
Again, you are listening to Good Health Radio Show, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System on KOHU. If you have any questions, to please send us an email to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Again, that is kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. So, Jim, you talked about a little bit about the finances of things, and I want to touch on that a little bit just so people kind of get an understanding of where healthcare is going. But I know for a fact that healthcare is one of the most highly regulated industries. Where do you see us going in the future?
Well, I think from the finance perspective, it's challenging, obviously, for everyone, not only you know, the healthcare facilities, but for the patients who continue to have to manage their insurances and their self-pay and what's out of pocket. I think the challenge continues to become how do healthcare systems, facilities, medical groups continue to reduce the cost of healthcare? Because I've been in it 29 years, and if somebody comes up to me and says, you guys are just too expensive, no matter what the cost is, they're right. We're all too expensive. And yet, if you want a general surgeon to do a good job, you're going to pay a general surgeon or someone to do your care. It's expensive because you have to remember you're paying for the expertise of those people who've gone through years and years of medical school and training to make sure that they know your systems inside and out, and that's probably literally. And so part of that is how do we continue to get the physicians and the providers and the staff we need to do that? I think, you know, part of the challenge on the horizon is just where healthcare is going in general. Mm-hmm. And recently at a hospital association meeting, there was large conversations about this. And that is, I guess, what I would call, and I'm going to coin a phrase that I've heard others use, including our CEO, and that is disruptive technology. And, you know, there are several available options right now out there to pull up your mobile phone and talk to a physician, pay a certain amount of fee up front as a copay, and if you have an iPhone or some other phone, and do a FaceTime call with a physician face-to-face on your phone, whether it's psychology, nutrition, clinical or medical. Actually, I think I've seen one for emergency services. Not sure how that one works exactly. Mm-hmm. And so just that idea of how do we reach the patient better, faster, quicker, cleaner, and still be appropriate care. And I think that is going to be one of the largest things that we'll continue to monitor in terms of, how does the Good Shepherd fit into that role? How do we get care to the people who can't get to the hospital or maybe who don't need to get to the hospital and see it face-to-face initially, but still have an opportunity to have that interaction with a provider? So I think those kinds of things are going to be disruptive, but I think they'll dramatically change the face of how we do healthcare and hopefully continue to bring down the cost as well.
Well, we did get a question from somebody in our community. They are wondering how we would go about determining if we had the capacity for an allergist to come to the community.
I think the biggest thing is we would probably look at our population data, which we get not only through our billing, but through people like our CCO and our insurance companies to determine how much of those we've seen come through. Mm-hmm. Now, the challenge is, of course, if you don't have an allergist program, then we're not going to see the patients.
Right.
And so, some of it is really about what is happening across the state, what kind of data are we seeing, and is there potential based on the population we have that we can apply those statistical analysis to our population and say, well, it looks like we would have this amount of population be able to take advantage of that kind of service. Right. We should do a more in-depth study. So it is difficult, but that's kind of what we would do because, again, if you don't have the service, you can't really determine how many people you have coming because you don't have the service. They're going somewhere else. Obviously, word of mouth helps too. If somebody says, like we just got, hey, I really wish you'd look into this, well, we'll go back and put it on our list and talk about it in strategic planning sessions. And our administrative council actually meets every single week for up to several hours to talk about these exact types of things and where it's appropriate to continue to go down the path and where it doesn't make sense to do that on our own, but definitely have some assistance maybe from someone who comes in even a couple of times a month so that a patient doesn't have to go elsewhere unless it's an emergency. And then, we can maybe potentially help them in our emergency room or they'll end up going somewhere for that care that we can't provide.
Sure. So again, you are listening to the Good Health Radio Show sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System on KOHU. If you have any questions, please send us an email to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Again, that is kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Jim, something else I want to ask you. As a chief operating officer, you touched on this a little bit, but you are needing to stay constantly kind of up to date on things that are happening in the industry. One thing that I want to talk to you about is transparency. That's becoming more apparent and a bigger issue that people want to know everything about the care and the providers before they will think about coming to a hospital or to a clinic. How is Good Shepherd addressing some of those needs?
Well, I think some of this information has gone out, but for example, we have a patient portal that people can actually see their information and data online. And so, that's just one example. The other thing is, though, as most facilities, we submit data to several entities, including our state association. Of course, CMS gathers data so that they can go out and look at data and compare to other hospitals. The CMS actually recently rolled out kind of their five-star system. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure everyone in the healthcare community agrees on how they are determining that,
sure.
But it's out there. You can look at it. You can compare hospitals. It's kind of like looking at a restaurant, which people are used to. Do I go here because it's 2 stars? Well, it's 4.5 stars. I think it's really better. I'm going to go to this one. Currently, we rate 3 stars, just like Cadillac and some other facilities, and we're determining how they're doing those ratings. But there's many opportunities. If you go to the Oregon website as well, the State of Association of Oregon website, you can look at data that is compiled about outcomes, and that's really what it is. It's what are the outcomes compared to other facilities, and are they high enough, and do you see enough volume to make me feel comfortable for the service that I need from you?
Sure. So what Jim mentioned as CMS is actually the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and they actually have a website where you can go and compare hospitals based on quality and patient satisfaction. One of the things that we do is a survey for pretty much all of our patients across the spectrum. What do those surveys kind of address or entail?
Well, really what we're after is, one is, was your needs met? I mean, and there's many questions that are involved in that, but were they met? Were they met timely? Do you have follow-up? Did somebody get back to you? Did you feel like your care was appropriate? I mean, there's several pieces. So, you know, when patients get those calls from an independent party, by the way, it's not necessarily Good Shepherd who's doing some of these surveys, although we do callbacks as well to make sure that our patients are following up with their care, following up with their discharge instructions, making sure that they didn't forget they're supposed to take their first dose of medicine immediately, those kinds of things. But those phone calls that they get from an independent party are really structured so that we can gather feedback and determine, wow, we really do a great job in this area, but we really have to let our patients know more about their medication management, or that our communication with the nurses could be better, or that when something is happening in the emergency room and they're a patient and suddenly they don't see somebody, it's because a trauma came in with multiple, you know, accident victims, et cetera. People will understand that, but you got to let them know. And so I think it's just a matter of how do we go about using that data? And we continue to have all of our management group review that data periodically to determine what they can do better in their department in each of those categories.
It really sounds like it's about kind of making sure everybody that's employed at Good Shepherd, anybody with a badge, is kind of hyper aware of the sensitivity of being a patient and just understanding or putting themselves in a patient's shoes, because obviously patients don't speak the healthcare language like many of us do, and we need to kind of address that with language they can understand, correct?
Yes, and I think the big challenge is that people don't understand is that really that, you know, our frontline leadership, which is really those in any level who work with and for a patient, are key. And that is not only our physicians and our nurses, mm-hmm. but it's our environmental services staff who probably see the patients more than some of us in administration or other areas,
sure.
because they do rounding, they clean the room, and just how important they are in terms of making sure that that room is clean for the next patient, in terms of making sure there's no viruses and getting infections and those kinds of things.
Right.
And so it really spans the gamut to our registration staff, who has to make sure that they work well and are knowledgeable to get the right information so that you as a patient can at least, we can help reduce your frustration with the healthcare system in general in terms of the billing cycle and the, working with the insurances and those types of things. And so I think every spectrum of that, you know, is very important in helping meet that goal.
So that brings up another question. So how do we at Good Shepherd address customer loyalty and satisfaction?
Well, we do it several ways. I mean, we have a program for our employees in terms of recognizing them for, you know, the things that you do. And they're really, it's recognized by, it's not you or I, another administrative team.
Sure.
It's anybody who sees something that is obviously needs to be recognized can recognize that employee. And so you know, we continue to expand upon that program. And, you know, we have a couple of different ways and a couple of different groups that are looking at how do we continue to make that better.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, we also have a program in place with our patients that, you know, if we don't meet your expectations and we know that and you know that, we're going to do something to try to help rectify that. Now, you know, maybe it's a gas card. Maybe it's a free meal at our cafeteria. Maybe it's something else. And, you know, by all no means, we're not trying to, like, buy you off with a $10 meal at the cafeteria so that you can get a good review when we give you a phone call.
Right.
But at the same time, we want to know that if we were on the other side, we want at least the knowledge as a patient that you understand how difficult it is for me as a patient and not just take it for granted. So there's a couple different programs that we continue to improve upon and maximize, but I think it really goes down to every person in our facility that wears a badge, because we have some who are not employed but still wear a hospital badge and work for our patients, we expect to follow the same timeline and kind of the same guidelines.
Okay. Before we go here, is there any other things that you would like to share about Good Shepherd that you can think of before we close?
Well, I think just in summary for myself, I'm glad to be here. My wife and my family are really glad to be here and be part of Good Shepherd. Hope to be here for years to come. And, you know, I'm so impressed with the staff that we have, again, because like any facility, and especially in healthcare, you really have to be here and want to be here if you're here. And so, you know, it's a challenge every day for every level of staff, whether you're cleaning a room or doing surgery. It's a challenge to maneuver all the various intricacies of the healthcare system.
Sure.
And from the patient perspective, you know, thank the patients for understanding and doing their best, because it's just as big a challenge for a patient to do and manage that same system from a patient perspective. So we continue to try to work together to make that the best environment possible.
You are listening to the Good Shepherd Healthcare Radio Show, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. I am your host, Nick Bejarano. And Jim, I'd like to thank you again for joining us today and sharing a little about the future of healthcare for the communities we serve. Be sure to join us again next month on Good Health.